left the bridge. Retreating to his quarters, Thanos spent days in deep study. With Cha distracting his daughters, he allowed himself to sink deep into the data at his disposal. His chambers came to resemble the silent curium of his memory. There was no sound save for the occasional whisper of his own breath, or the infrequent hard thump of his heart when he realized something anew. He downloaded statistics and data from satellites orbiting distant worlds in far-off solar systems. He pored over information gleaned from obscure tracts and hidden caches of knowledge. He calculated and he massaged his intelligence and he applied his considerable brain to the question of how many worlds needed to be saved and how best to save them. The results were chilling. They made him so despondent that he did not leave his quarters for another week, simply lay in his bed and stared straight ahead at nothing. At absolutely nothing. It was no longer a matter of saving individual planets, he realized. He'd been too nearsighted and too short-sighted to comprehend the sheer enormity of the problem ahead of him. The planets were in danger, yes, but the planets existed as parts of the universe. And the universe itself was in danger of succumbing to the same fate as Titan. The universe was vast, but not infinite. There was a finite number of habitable worlds, and thus a finite supply of resources to support life. The number was enormous, yes, almost unimaginably so. But it was a number. It was finite and limited. And therefore, according to his new calculations, and based on his models, now tried on the ashes of hundreds of worlds, within the next 100 billion years, the universe would run out of the resources to support life. When he'd first calculated that number, he had laughed with relief. 100 billion years was an unimaginably ridiculous length of time. It was almost an obscenity. And yet, time was inexorable. 1 year or 100 billion of them, the day would come. And did not the people of 100 billion years hence deserve their lives as much as those living in the present? Who was he, who was anyone, to claim that a life lived right now was more valuable or worthy or deserving than one lived 100 million millennia from now? By that time in the future, there would be multiples of sextillions of living sentience in the universe, a staggeringly large number. And every single one of them would be doomed. Why should a child in the future suffer, starve, and die in horror just so a child today could live in comfort? He could continue to travel the cosmos and try to fix planets and civilizations one by one, but
it's a big damned universe out there, he whispered to himself.
And that night, the dream came to him again, for the first time in years.
Remember what I have told you, Gwynth said.
She was almost completely bare of flesh at this point, her body a loose jointed skeleton hanging with gobbets of leftover skin and scraps of muscle that did not know how to let go. Her jaw clicked as she spoke. And he remembered when he awoke. He always remembered now. Ever since he'd lied to Cha. She said, save everyone. That's what he'd told Cha all those years ago on the Golden Birth, when he lived under the yoke of his lordship. But that was not all. That was only half of what she'd told him. Quite literally.
You cannot save everyone, she'd said.
It made so much sense now. His algorithm applied not to a planet, but to the universe as a whole. To save the universe for the people of the future, he needed to kill half of it. He needed to kill half the universe. He laughed at the thought. Laughed for a long, long time.
Thank you, he whispered. Thank you, Gwynth, for leading me down the right path once again.
He summoned Cha, his warrior daughters, and the other to the bridge. They were the only beings in his army capable of independent planning. And while his intellect outweighed theirs, combined, in every possible measure, he did feel that there was value in other perspectives, no matter how wrong. Cha sat at the navigation pod, his chair twisted around to face Thanos in the commander's chair. The other stood ramrod straight nearby. And his daughters... The girls were girls no longer, verging on womanhood. Insolent and filled with hate and anger, they were so focused on their loathing for him that they did not realize how he'd made them his perfect weapons. Soon would be the time to unleash them with his armies, to watch them kill in his name as they deluded themselves into thinking that they were just biding their time, looking for his weakness. He had no weakness. They would kill for him again and again, hating him, and do his loving work. Nebula lounged in the weapons pod, her back against one chair arm, her legs draped over the other. Gamora perched atop a console nearby. They sparred and they bickered, but they also stayed close to each other, as though subject to some unspoken but understood détente that they enforced so long as it was to their mutual advantage.
"You've heard the problem," Thanos told them. "We've been taking the plodding course of going from planet to planet, identifying those with environmental issues like Titans. But the universe as a whole is endangered. The problem before was merely staggering in its scope. Now it is nearly impossible to conceive. I welcome your suggestions for a solution."
"Gee, Dad," said Nebula. "Why don't we just build a bomb big enough to kill half the universe? Do it in one shot." "That's stupid," Gamora grumbled. "At least I'm contributing," Nebula said, her remaining organic eye flashing with anger. "Contributing something stupid is worse than just keeping your mouth shut in the first place." Nebula spun in her chair, a blur of motion so fast that even Thanos had trouble keeping up with her movement. But before she could do anything else, Gamora was at Nebula's throat with a blade.
"Not now," Thanos said reprovingly.
Gamora snarled and jerked the blade away. Nebula sidled away, a hand to her throat. Her cybernetic eye spasmed open and closed, a sign that she was losing control. Thanos gave her his sternest glare and she settled down.
"A bomb big enough to kill half the universe," Thanos said once the room had calmed, "is an attractive notion, but imprecise and impractical. It's not as though I can snap my fingers and make it so. But something must be done. Inevitable death is a sad enough fate for an individual or a world. For an entire reality? Unforgivable."
Cha folded his arms over his chest and humphed.
"You cannot expect to understand the machinations of fate."
"How convenient for fate," Thanos remarked.
"It was always a crazy idea," Nebula said sulkily. "Now it's just a bigger crazy idea. Running around the universe, killing off people in order to save them? Insane."
"Sanity is a matter of perspective, determined by social norms," Thanos told her.
As he spoke, he watched Gamora, not Nebula. Gamora's expression, as always, revealed nothing of what she was thinking. He found her stoicism impressive and unnerving.
"I am not bound by social norms. My sanity is not at issue."
"Says you,"
Nebula snarked.
"Indeed."
Thanos opened his hands wide.
"I am still amenable to suggestions."
No one spoke.
"Have we come this far? Only to meet a terminal pause?"
he asked the room.
"Come this far?"
Gamora said, with the slightest hint of a smile at the corners of her lips. In their teen years, both his daughters had developed a mild rebellious streak. Gamora spoke less often, but with more bite.
"How far have we come? 1 billion inhabited worlds in the universe, with billions of souls on each one. And you've killed less than 1 trillion in total so far."
She clapped slowly, mockingly.
"Well done, Mighty Thanos, Warlord Thanos, truly, the stars do quake at your footsteps.
Say the word, Nebula urged, and I'll cut her tongue out. And give me a robotic one like yours?
Gamora asked sweetly. Nebula leaped up from her chair and launched herself at her sister, who sidestepped at the last possible instant and rabbit-punched Nebula in the side. Nebula gasped in pain and flew over the control console, crashing into the bulkhead. Gamora smoothly vaulted over the console, her knife already drawn.
Gamora! Nebula!
Thanos barked, his voice cut off somewhat by the sound of Nebula's strangled gasp for breath as Gamora landed on her solar plexus.
We do not have time for this.
Shielded from Thanos's view by the console, they scuffled there for a few moments, grunting and cursing. Finally, Thanos rose from his seat, leaned over the console, and hauled them to their feet, where, despite his massive hands on their shoulders, they continued to swing and swipe at each other.
You vex me,
he informed them, squeezing so tightly that bones in Gamora's shoulder ground together painfully. Nebula's new artificial shoulder complex whined electronically.
Vex me no further.
He shoved them to the floor.
Sure, Dad,
Nebula said darkly.
As you say,
Gamora said, with an indifferent toss of her hair. He waited until they had taken seats again, once again damnably close together. These two could not stand to be together, could not abide being apart, and then returned to his own seat.
A problem of enormous size does not always require a solution of equal size, he said. Sometimes finesse, critical thinking, and planning may suffice where brute force cannot.
Like the way we overcame the three Asgardian warriors near Alfheim?
Cha offered. The mention of the Asgardians made Thanos think, surprisingly, of Kebi. He'd not thought about her in years, and he was stunned to find that the memory of her was both clear and painful, as though its clarity sharpened its edges, making it difficult to turn the remembrance over in his mind. She had been the first sacrificed in the name of his mission, the first to have the trust she'd put in him repaid with her own blood. He did not mourn her passing, but he mourned the loss of her presence. They were not the same, though the distinction was probably too fine, too nuanced for others.
The Asgardians,
he murmured.
Their artifact.
Cha shook his head.
Thanos, that was years ago. I'm sure the Asgardians have redoubled security on their, what was it called? Their bespoke gate technology?
Bifrost,
Thanos said absently.
Right.
Cha stared at Thanos, tilting his head this way, then that.
Thanos, are you actually considering this? Again? Do you remember what happened last time?
Thanos closed his eyes and, for a moment, was back on board the Blood Edda. Smoke purled from control panels. Kebi was dying in his arms, even as his own blood fled his body with fierce rapidity. In his life, he had conquered many worlds, brought many species to extinction. In the past several years, he had gone from one war to another. Yet those moments with Cha and Kebi on the Blood Edda were the closest he had ever come to death.
I remember exquisitely,
he told Cha, opening his eyes. Across the bridge, his daughters scrutinized him, as though they'd finally found the weakness they'd sought all these years. He filed it away for later.
I remember coming very, very close to victory, at a time when we were younger, less puissant, and without resources.
You want a mounted assault on Asgard?
Cha asked, his voice high-pitched and terrified.
Are you serious? All to seek out something that may not even exist?
His lordship was not exactly...
sane?
I was going to say a reliable source of information, but yours works just as well.
The Asgardian we first encountered,
Thanos mused aloud.
Vathlos.
The one you tortured,
Cha said, managing to keep a tone of judgment out of his voice.
Yes, him. He certainly seemed to believe that Odin was hiding something. Something monumentally powerful.
Cha threw his hands up in the air.
This is madness. I've gone along with much since we met Thanos, but invading the home of Odin himself? In pursuit of something that may or may not even exist?
Ether, Thanos murmured. He called it Ether. The Infinity Stone.
Cha had opened his mouth to argue further, but at the words Infinity Stone, he froze. After a moment, he managed to say,
Is that what he told you? He said Odin had an Infinity Stone. You never told me that before.
Thanos shrugged.
It no longer seemed to matter. We had no way to return to Asgard. But...
Something occurred to him.
An Infinity Stone? There's more than one.
I don't...
Cha scratched at his head in bemusement.
I don't know. You hear things. Rumors. Space lore. Especially out on the rim, where I was doing my work before his lordship abducted me and pressed me into service. People tell all kinds of stories. But still, it would be crazy to try to take an army to Asgard on the mere word of a dying man.
I agree. That would be madness. We first need to ascertain whether the artifact exists, and then what it is and what it does. And then, if it is worthwhile, we will raise Asgard to find it.
Cha shook his head.
How exactly do you propose to learn all of this? Are we going to find and torture more Asgardians and hope this time it works out?
Lore speaker.
It was the first time the other had spoken since the meeting had been convened.
Excuse me?
Thanos said.
At the same moment, Cha groaned loudly and said, Oh, no.
Lore speaker,
the other said again, very precisely.
Lore speaker will know. He knows everything.
Don't be an idiot,
Cha howled, pointing at the other. Thanos nodded minutely to Gamora, who came up behind Cha and put a strong hand on Cha's shoulder. The Syrian calmed down almost immediately.
What is a lore speaker?
Thanos asked.
Not what. Who?
The other explained.
The lore speaker knows everything worth knowing. All the stories. The lore speaker hears all and knows all. Every legend, every myth, every tale.
Why have I never heard of this lore speaker before?
Cha fumed in his seat, arms folded over his chest.
Because it's a fairy tale, Thanos.
When the Chitauri shrugged, which wasn't often, their carapaces clacked against their cybernetic implants. It was an oddly hollow sound, and the other made it now.
It is a big universe, Lord Thanos. No one knows all of it, except the lore speaker.
Thanos held up a hand to forestall Cha's indignant interruption. Cha spoke through clenched teeth, eager to leap up from his chair, but mindful of Gamora standing behind him.
The lore speaker is a charlatan. He knows as much fiction as fact and spews them in equal quantities.
He turned his attention to Thanos.
Don't listen to this bug. The lore speaker will lead you down a path that ends in a black hole, then push you in.
Thanos considered this.
What harm can there be in at least consulting with his lore speaker? If he speaks truth, so be it. If not, we are no worse off than before.
The lore speaker lives within the Kel'Dim sorrow,
Cha said, his voice swamped with pleading.
It's madness to go there.
The Kel'Dim sorrow,
Thanos frowned.
That sounds familiar.
He held up a hand to keep anyone from speaking as he sorted through his memory, seeking that term. He had a nearly perfect recollection, but with so many memories crammed in, it could be difficult to locate just the right one. And then it hit him. His lordship. The first time Thanos had met him, kneeling quite against his will, as Robo stood over him.
And where would you go?
His lordship had asked.
We're deep in the Raven's Sweep. Near a system is the Kel'Dim Sorrow.
His lordship, Thanos murmured. He knew of the Chaldean sorrow.
Even that's parsecs away, his lordship had continued. And no life forms, nothing habitable.
And it suddenly made sense. Thanos ground his teeth together and damned himself for being a blind fool, an incompetent dullard who could not see properly the path laid out for him. His lordship had sought the Asgardian artifact, and had steered the golden berth right into the Raven's sweep, which abutted the Chaldean sorrow. It wasn't madness or stupidity.
It was a plan, Thanos said aloud.
What was a plan, Dad?
Nebula asked. He opened his eyes and fixed his gaze on Cha.
His lordship wasn't randomly flitting about the Raven's sweep. He was seeking the Chaldean sorrow and the lore speaker, wasn't he? To confirm what he thought he knew about the Asgardian artifact.
Cha did not flinch or turn away from Thanos' glare.
I don't know. Maybe. I wasn't privy to his lordship's plans. You were in the inner circle, not I.
Gods of hell,
Nebula swore.
Listening to old people talk about the past is the most boring thing ever.
For once, her sister agreed.
Someone get to a point,
Gamora said with an emphatic nod.
Any point?
Thanos gestured with a finger in the direction of the door.
You're both dismissed. You too,
he said to the other.
Cha and I will speak alone.
Once they were the only ones on the bridge, Cha slammed an open palm on the table.
Come on, Thanos. It's me. Cha. The others don't know you like I do. They didn't watch you hauled comatose and near death from your first ship. They didn't watch you cleaning the portholes on the Golden Berth.
No, they didn't.
Thanos stood, pulling himself to his full, intimidating height.
They fear me and respect me. Do you? Or do you think I'm still that helpless pup his lordship pulled from a dying spaceship? Or the broken fool you tended to after the Blood Edda?
Cha groaned and scrubbed at his face with both hands.
Thanos, I'm trying to save you from yourself. We both almost died in the Raven Sweep. It's parsecs in every direction of Starless, nothing. You found a magnetar, and we got lucky when you found the old Kalami Gate. You can't think we'll get lucky again like that.
We have a different ship, different engines. We'll plan for the Raven Sweep.
Once you get through the sweep,
Cha told him,
your problems have only begun. The Chaldean sorrow is an entire solar system that was wiped out millennia ago. And not wiped out in the sense that you do, where you leave biomes and lesser species intact. These are total scorched globes. Not a bird, not a butterfly, not a blade of grass lives on those worlds, Thanos. 15 planets like that, all of them orbiting the remains of a star that died long ago.
He leaned over the table, his eyes wide. His voice deep with pain and omens.
There's no light, no heat, nothing at all. Only a rumor that somehow this blasphemous creature called the Law Speaker lives on one of those dead worlds, muttering to himself the stories only he cares about and only he knows.
Thanos contemplated this for a full minute. An eternity for one with his intellect.
Nothing you've said, he told Cha, frightens me. Not in the least.
It's madness!
Cha leaped up from his seat.
You're talking about plunging the ship and your crew into a years-long trek through the most blighted corner of the galaxy, all for a reward that may not even exist!
Do you have a better suggestion?
Thanos demanded.
We are at an impasse. We cannot continue on our current course.
So you'll take a blind leap into the universe instead? Congratulations, Thanos,
Cha said bitterly.
It took years, but you've become his lordship.
With that, Cha stalked out of the room, leaving Thanos alone on the bridge. Cha's words echoed far longer than he would have thought possible.
You've become his lordship.
Thanos turned to behold himself in the reflective surface of the ship's pulso glass. He saw, with eyes unencumbered by ego or prejudice, confidence. Strength. Robustness. His lordship had been a weak, puling, unscrupulous wretch, who loitered at death's door and was willing to drag others with him over the threshold.
I am not his lordship. I am Thanos of Titan. I am the savior who will bring balance to the universe. And I will let no one stop me.
Later, Cha came to Thanos in his personal quarters, where Thanos sat at his interface desk, plotting a new course.
The other tells me that you've ordered most of the fleet back to the Chitauri homeworld, Cha said without preamble.
Not turning away from his work, Thanos responded.
Yes, it's long past time for them to begin settling their new homeworld. They have more than lived up to our end of the bargain.
So, you're resolved, then, to seek out the Law Speaker.
To learn the truth about the Infinity Stone, or stones, as the case may be. Yes.
There could well be other sources of inform.
I will not traipse around the universe, picking up bits and pieces of lore and truth from a thousand sources, when I can quite likely get it all in one fell swoop.
Then I can go no further, Thanos. I've allowed you to seduce me into your quest and your madness, but here I will not yield. This new plan of yours is insanity atop insanity. You must stop. Here. Now. You must turn back.
Thanos tilted his head, pondering.
You don't want me to stop because it's madness. You want me to stop because you know I can do it.
I know no such thing.
As they spoke, Thanos stared at his hands, his fingers manipulating the holographic star charts that would lead them to the Raven's Sweep. Once there, they would find no stars to guide them. They would have to maintain a precise and perfectly balanced course through the sweep if they were to come out on the other side in the Kel'Deem Sorrow. Back to the Raven's Sweep, the place that had almost killed him. He had no fear of it, but caution and fear were not the same.
Don't worry. I'm being very careful, Cha. I've learned the lessons of his lordship's failures.
Have you? Or have you just modified them to suit your needs?
Thanos spun in his chair. For a moment, it was as though he were seeing Cha for the first time, opening his eyes in the medical bay on the golden berth, beholding that too orange skin, those ears, that ridiculous kilt he used to wear. And for some reason, this made him think of Cinta, whom he'd not spared a thought for in years, not since he'd returned from the blasted and dead surface of Titan. Cinta, who had been his friend, who had tried so hard to make Thanos part of something bigger. Now Thanos was something bigger. His quest was more important than his own life, or the life of anyone else. It was the most important thing in the universe. How fortunate, he realized, that Titan died. That his people had not heeded his warning. If they had, he would have committed suicide long ago, and never would have lived to bring balance to the universe. He could not entertain Cha's notions of destiny and predetermined fate, but he could acknowledge and celebrate simple luck.
This is my task, Cha. I will complete it. It's as simple as that.
There's nothing simple about what you propose. Killing half the universe? It's madness.
You didn't seem to have a problem when we were doing it one planet at a time.
Cha worried his lower lip and started pacing.
It happened so gradually. And it made sense. At first, the idea that you could save a world here and there. A worthy goal, to be sure. But now?
Thanos sat silently for a moment, regarding his oldest friend. He knew exactly where this was headed, and it was long past time, he realized.
Your pacing is unnerving me. Let's walk instead.
He stood and bade Cha follow him into the corridor. Together they walked down empty halls. With most of the Chitauri outfitting the Leviathans for a return to their homeworld, Sanctuary was nearly empty, save with Thanos and Cha, the other, and the pair of demons he called his daughters.
"I've been thinking about this a lot, Thanos,"
Cha told him as they walked.
"I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. I know your dream means much to you. Save everyone, a noble goal. But you've gone too far."
"You put too much stock in my dream, Cha,"
Thanos said, with a hand clapped on his friend's shoulder. He'd always known that someday he would have to tell Cha the truth of his dream. It was only fair. Thanos was many things, but rarely a liar, as Dakan Ro knew too well.
"I did not tell you the whole truth of my dream, Cha," he said,
stopping in the middle of the corridor. An airlock hatch was nearby, and Thanos leaned against it.
"She did not tell me to save everyone. That was only half her message."
Perplexed, Cha tilted his head to the side.
"What was the other half?"
"She said to me, 'You cannot save everyone.'"
Cha mouthed the words once, then again, then a third time. His eyes widened with each iteration.
"It wasn't a directive," he said slowly. "It was a statement of fact. And yet you continued anyway. Even though you knew that you couldn't actually save everyone."
"Yes. Because,"
Thanos said gently,
"that is our only path forward. To defy death and allow for life."
"Defy death?"
Cha laughed once, sharp and bitter.
"You damned hypocrite! You don't defy death. You enable it. You've delivered billions to death."
He held his head in his hands.
"You... how did I not see it before? How did I not know?"
"Because you were blinded, as so many are, by your preconceptions and your rigid adherence to your own way of seeing the universe. You sought a massive change in the balance of the universe, a tilt toward peace, and you were so desperate for it that you threw away your own beliefs to follow the one who seemed to offer it. But peace is just a byproduct of balance, Cha. And balance requires sacrifice."
"No,"
Cha moaned, crumpling against the wall.
"When I first met you, you killed in desperation to save Titan. Now you kill because you couldn't save Titan. Your destiny was always slaughter."
Thanos drew in a deep breath.
"Don't presume to tell me what I can and cannot do, Cha. I could have saved Titan, had that been my desire."
Cha goggled at him.
"Are you mad? What are you talking about? They're all dead. They were dead when we got there."
And so Thanos told him what he had discovered. 50 stories below the surface of Titan, in the clean room at the root of the Mentorplex. He told him of the synth that had worn his father's face and spoken with his father's voice, and he told him of the gene library and what he'd done to it. Cha's eyes could widen no further. They trembled and shook as tears leaked out of them.
"You're not a savior?"
he said, his voice rising as he went on.
"You're just a killer. You enjoy it. You sow death like no other, but at your core, you're a coward, Thanos. A coward! You hide behind this ship, behind the other and the Chitauri, and now behind those girls!"
Cha grabbed Thanos by the arm, pleading with him.
"Listen to me. It's not too late. You can't continue on this path. You must repent and find a peaceful..."
Thanos reached out and took Cha's head between his hands. With a single, simple twist, he snapped Cha's neck. Cha's expression went slack, dull. Thanos had known it would come to this someday, that Cha's heartfelt belief in the innate goodness of the universe would inevitably overwhelm friendship, loyalty, and common sense. It was not the first sacrifice Thanos had made on his quest.
He hoped it would be the last.
I had no choice,
Thanos whispered.
I think perhaps you understand.
Then he cycled open the airlock, shoved Shah's body inside, and recycled. The inner door closed, the outer door opened. Cha's body ejected into the unforgiving, frigid blackness of space. He took a moment to himself, staring at the blank surface of the closed airlock. He'd done the only thing possible. He'd done the right thing. Yes, the right thing. On the bridge, Thanos informed the other that
Char Rhaegor is no longer part of our mission.
The other merely nodded. Power. True strength neither needs nor makes excuses. Chapter 37. When Sanctuary entered the Raven's Sweep, it bore only Thanos and his children. The other had joined the rest of the Chitauri to prepare for their exodus to a new homeworld. Any of the planets Thanos had ravaged would be suitable and far superior to their current home. They had their pick. He planned the trip through the sweep carefully. At super light speed, it would take less than a year to traverse the Raven's Sweep. But that was the mistake his lordship had made, thinking that speed was all that mattered, that he could bullet through the Raven's Sweep and come out on the other side. He'd been wrong. The great distance involved meant that super-light-speed travel would drain the engines of their power, leaving the ship stranded, like the Golden Berth, without a way to refuel. Thanos would not allow his plans to turn on lucking into another Magnetar. He plotted a slow, methodical course through the Raven's Sweep, one that would take close to 2 years, but would leave him with enough power in his engines to return. He spent his time training Nebula and Gamora, watching their mutual hatred grow, even as, paradoxically, they bonded closer and closer. Their emotions had become twisted parodies of love, hate, and devotion. They yearned to kill Thanos, to kill each other, perhaps even to kill themselves. And yet their desire to prove their own superiority overrode those urges. They couldn't kill him, because they craved his approval. They couldn't kill each other because they needed someone to dominate, and they couldn't kill themselves, because that would obviate everything else they wanted and needed and thirsted for. They were the perfect assassins. As he learned one night when he opened his eyes from sleep, only to find Gamora standing over him. In her hands she held a Chitauri battle staff, one that, he could tell at a glance, had been upgraded considerably. If sloppily. Attached to it was a pulsometric lightning flange, powered by a slender fusion bottle that she'd grafted onto the haft. The whole thing crackled silently with pitiless power. A stealth weapon and a devastating power armament at the same time. He was proud.
Do it,
he told her. She hesitated. Then, with something like sadness in her eyes, she thumbed off the pulsometrics and turned to leave. In the morning, he punished her for not following through, and from then on, he made certain to double-lock the door to his quarters when he slept. Yes, the thorny, twisted confines of their emotions acted as a sort of shield, but no shield could hold forever. Training his daughters did not occupy all his time. He returned to his studies, specifically to genetic engineering, picking up where he'd left off on the Chitauri homeworld. The Chitauri were good soldiers, but he had begun to think they could be improved upon. Using samples of their DNA, his own DNA, and some genetic samples from the worlds he'd vanquished, he began to work on what he thought of as his outriders, fiercely loyal, bred only for combat. He planned to breed thousands of them, millions if possible, to be his vanguard throughout the galaxy. Eventually they would replace the Chitauri, who were capable but also limited by their hive mind. Thanos wanted soldiers he could pre-program from birth. One day, hard at work at his biochemical forge, he sensed a presence behind him and turned quickly. In his own way, he loved the girls, but he did not entirely trust them. It was Gamora, weaponless, standing a safe and respectable distance from him, her hands twined together anxiously.
"What do you need?"
he asked her, annoyed at the interruption.
"Why did you kill Char Rhaegor?"
Gamora asked him. Thanos sucked in a breath.
"Honestly, I never realized you made much note of him."
"He was the only other adult on the ship. You didn't think we'd notice when he was gone?"
"True." He nodded, conceding her point.
"What makes you think I killed him?"
She snorted the sort of derision only a child in the throes of adolescence can muster.
"No escape pods were jettisoned. There are no jump ships missing from the launch bay."
"Ah."
"Nebula and I looked through the whole ship, even in the engine room. We didn't find anything. So we figured you killed him and threw the body out an airlock."
Her tone was calm, almost nonchalant, but her lower lip trembled ever so slightly when she spoke.
"You and Nebula worked together?"
he asked.
"Don't change the subject."
Her quivering lip stiffened.
"The Chitauri ignored us. The other barely tolerated us. Cha was actually nice to us. We liked him. Why did you kill him?"
He thought carefully before answering. Not because he planned to lie to her, but because he wanted to tell her the absolute truth to the best of his understanding. There was little cause for lies between father and daughters, in this or any other matter.
"He challenged me," he told her.
"He always challenged you,"
Gamora said with a tilt of her chin. She would someday be devastatingly beautiful, a trait that would make her task even easier. Few were perspicacious enough to perceive death behind a scrim of comeliness.
"Why now?"
With a great sigh, Thanos stood and clasped his hands behind his back, turning away from her to look out at the starless expanse of the Raven's Sweep.
"We are at a critical juncture in our mission. I need absolute obedience."
"Nebula and I don't always obey you. When will you kill us?"
He twisted just enough to peer back at her. There was no fear or concern in her expression. She masked her emotions well.
"Cha was a friend. You are my children. There's a difference. Children are supposed to be willful and disobedient on occasion."
An image of his father came to him for the first time in many years, not of the synth that pretended to be him, but of Alars himself. Thanos had never asked him, in tones as blunt as Gamora's,
"Why do you continue to tolerate me? Why do you suffer my existence? Why haven't you locked me away next to Mother in a psychosylum?"
But he was certain that the answer would have been roughly the same as the one he gave to Gamora.
"We're not really your daughters,"
she said, a note of sulking in her voice.
"You are my children in every way that matters."
Chapter 38. The Keldeem's sorrow was as bleak and as blighted as Cha had described. For a full day of travel, Thanos did not even realize that they'd exited the Raven's Sweep and entered the Sorrow, so black and desolate were the vistas outside Sanctuary's pulso-glass portholes. But then the ship's sensors detected a planet-sized mass. The ship automatically compensated for the gravity well, shifting so as not to become trapped and collide with the dead world. And dead it was. Thanos had murdered billions, but had left the worlds as untouched as war possibly could. Years after his assaults, trees still grew. Grass carpeted the prairies. Predators stalked their prey through verdant jungles and over rolling veldts. The whole complex farrago of life still bloomed and clashed on those worlds. Here, the planets were utterly denuded, scoured clean of even microbes. They were rocks and sand, pillars of stone and frozen lakes of magma, lifeless marbles scattered on the black felt of reality. And at the center of them, the axis on which they all turned, a crumbling, dying star, more shadow than light, noticeable mainly by the sparks that occasionally spat from its core out into the cold reaches of space. The Keldeem's sorrow was as dead as anything could be. Thanos felt great sadness and great admiration in equal measure. There were 15 planets in the Kel'Dim Sorrow, and 60 moons of sufficient size to merit examination. Thanos called up a three-dimensional chart of the system, then plotted the most efficient course that would take Sanctuary to within scanning range of each planet and moon. According to his calculations, he would need at most 3 weeks and 6 days to scan them all. He got lucky. Halfway through the second week, his scanners detected something on a large moon orbiting the fourth planet from the distant, dying sun. It was a heat signature, consistent with life. And it was so small in comparison to the surrounding gloom and cold that he almost missed it. A chill ran down his spine. What if he had missed it? What if he'd continued on his path, scanning every world, and had ended up finding, so he would believe, absolutely nothing? And then left the Kel'Dim Sorrow without so much as a souvenir to mark his arrival, left without any of the information he so desperately needed. But he reminded himself that had not happened. He'd spied the heat signature, and now had Sanctuary in a geosynchronous orbit above the spot. Cha would have said, "When the universe is in harmony, all things wind up in their proper place, Thanos. Of course you found it." He reminded himself that Cha had been a superstitious fool, and that it was for the better that he was dead. The girls joined him at the ship end of the shuttle drop portal. Sanctuary's shuttles had an old-fashioned propulsion system that needed the assistance of a drop portal, like a pebble blown or sucked through a straw. The shuttlecraft would engage engines, and then the far end of the drop portal would open, and the change in pressure would suck the shuttle out into the vacuum of space. Thanos donned an environment suit, trying not to think of the last time he'd done so, before his trip to the surface of Titan. He'd had to jerry-rig a suit by stitching together 2 normal-sized ones. Now he had a bespoke environment suit, crafted for him by the Chitauri, with his own special modifications.
"What's to stop us from taking the ship and leaving you here?" Nebula asked saucily.
2 things, Thanos intoned, ticking them off on his right hand. First, you haven't the proper training to maintain the power balance in the engines, so you'd run out of power before you could get back to civilized space. Second, without me as a counterweight around, at this point in your training you'd kill each other before you broke orbit.
They exchanged knowing glances. Gamora said nothing. Nebula snorted in a way that meant she'd been bested, but couldn't admit it.
"Might be worth it," she said.
With a detached shrug, he turned to enter the shuttlecraft, then paused, as though remembering a long-buried memory, and turned back to them.
"Oh, and one more reason," he said. "There's a modified sympathy circuit on this ship. If it travels more than a light-year from me, it will explode, killing everyone on board."
"Checkmate,"
Gamora said. Despite herself, she was grinning. Thanos climbed into the shuttle and disengaged from Sanctuary. The last thing he saw was Nebula, scowling at him from the ship end of the drop portal. And then the space end opened, and with a lurch, he was yanked unceremoniously out into space, with only the thin alloy skin of the shuttle between him and vacuum. The shuttle fell more than flew to the surface of the moon. Its engines were relatively weak and were best for maneuvering. The moon was large, its gravitational pulls strong. The shuttle careered toward it as though eager for a union. Thanos landed close to the structure he'd observed from orbit. It was a low building, no more than a story or two, assuming the inhabitant was roughly humanoid and standard size. The structure seemed small, but he had no idea how big the occupant was. There was no appreciable atmosphere outside the shuttle. He locked down his environment suit and stepped outside, wary. Even with a genteel name like the Lore Speaker, there was no guarantee that Thanos would not be greeted with violence. Most beings who chose to live in such abject isolation protected their privacy with great jealousy and zeal. All around him, there was a sudden flash of light and a whooshing sound. He recognized it as an environment field snapping into place. According to his suit's readout, the area around him was now habitable. Mindful of how he'd slain three Asgardians by shutting off such a field at just the right moment, he decided to keep his suit on and active. He started walking toward the building, whose entrance was shrouded in darkness. As he neared, a figure emerged from that darkness, walking with slow, steady steps toward him. It wore a cloak patterned in red and gray, with a hood over its head. A belted sash drew in the waist, and supple gray boots came to its knees, kicking up dust as it strode closer. It carried something that was either a short staff or a long scepter, perhaps a meter in length, curved. Its top quarter was wrapped in frayed strips of hide. Thanos stopped in his tracks and decided to allow the figure to advance no closer than 2 meters. Any closer and he would need to attack. As though it could read his mind, the figure stopped at precisely 2 meters distant. After a slight pause, it peeled back the hood, and Thanos beheld a face like an upside-down triangle with rounded corners, a fringe of bluish hair above the ears, and a thin, pointed beard of the same bluish hue. Thanos had expected someone old and wizened, a wrinkled and broken-down ancient. The lore speaker, as best he could tell, appeared to be not much older than Thanos himself. Shorter, though. He grinned up at Thanos and spoke with a voice freighted with age and contemplation.
Welcome. I can tell by your expression that you are expecting someone a little older. Are you the lore speaker?
Maybe this was an assistant, a major domo.
I am. You wonder about my age, I'm sure. I'm much older than I appear. My people are exceptionally long-lived. And who might those people be?
The lore speaker shrugged indifferently.
The others like me? Answer me this. Do you truly want to continue to stand outside? There's little to see.
He swept an arm out to encompass the gray rocks and flat sand plains. Thanos conceded that this was so. He followed the lore speaker into the building. Inside, the place was cluttered with old, old technology. It took Thanos a while to identify some of the pieces and their purposes. A stove, a flat-screen entertainment-slash-information appliance, a freezer. Thanos wondered exactly how long the lore speaker had been here.
There's a persistent environment in here,
the lore speaker told him.
You can take off that suit.
The lore speaker seemed to be breathing fine, and the suit's screen confirmed that the building had an atmosphere. Thanos peeled off the head covering of his environment suit and took a breath of slightly stale air.
I don't get a lot of visitors,
the lore speaker said. A half second later, as though remembering to do so, he smiled.
May I offer you some tea?
The building made Thanos feel claustrophobic. The walls were too close, the ceiling too low. He agreed to the tea and tried to find a place to sit.
Sit anywhere,
the lore speaker told him as he set down his scepter on a counter and began rummaging through a cabinet.
I have a tea that I only open for guests. It's been quite a while. Let me find it.
Thanos found a sofa that seemed sturdy enough and wide enough to accommodate his frame. The entire place was meticulously clean, with shelves of orderly ranks of old data disks, big, flimsy, early-generation chips, and a stack of things that, to his surprise, turned out to be actual bound paper publications. He had only seen such things in a museum. Unless the lore speaker had access to some sort of galaxy-spanning teleportation technology, there was no way to replenish his stores. Where did his food come from, without replication technology, and no way to grow it? What did he do for new entertainment, for diversion, for information acquisition? Thanos began to feel unsettled. Something was wrong here. Something was very wrong. He couldn't quite put his finger on it.
Ah, got it.
The lore speaker held up a smallish tin, crowing.
I knew it was in here. Let me just put the kettle on.
As Thanos watched, the lore speaker activated the stove. A glowing red ring appeared there, and he placed a bulbous vessel atop it.
A nice cuppa, the lore speaker said. Just the thing for a chilly night, eh?
His expression brightened.
That's my attempt at a joke, Thanos. It's been a long time since I told one. Did I do it wrong?
Thanos blinked.
How do you know my name?
The lore speaker plucked up his scepter and settled into a chair across from Thanos.
My blessing and my curse is a sort of cosmic awareness. It has its limits, though. To a distance of roughly 3 parsecs, I am aware of almost every occurrence and happening.
Thanos arched an eyebrow. It was as significant an expression of disbelief as he was willing to display. The lore speaker chuckled.
I understand if you don't believe me. Allow me to prove it. In orbit above this planet is the ship you came here in. There are 2 young women aboard. One is a Zihoberi.
Thanos arched his other eyebrow, this time in surprise.
I know where they're from. I have a significant storehouse of Zihoberi myth and history in my head. It would be a pleasure to...
He broke off for a moment and stared into the middle distance. Just when Thanos had decided to say something, the lore speaker shivered out of his reverie.
It would be a pleasure to share those with her. This is what you do? Thanos asked. You remember histories? Not histories. Stories. Myths, legends, lore, Thanos. Some of it true, some of it false, some of it truer for being invented. Why here? Why so far from the people whose stories you tell? In any sort of civilized system,
the lore speaker explained, speaking slowly.
There's too much input. A constant awareness and a constant stream of information. I'm capable of sorting it and ordering it. Barely. I would forget to eat, to bathe, to sleep. And when I did sleep, I would dream the dreams of billions of souls around me.
He sighed.
It was untenable. I needed to go somewhere quiet. You needed to become a hermit. It's not that I rejected civilization. I just couldn't be around it. I'm more than happy to have visitors if they can get here. The juxtaposition of the sorrow to the sweep was a perfect coincidence for me. Parsecs of silence in every direction. Absolute isolation.
He grinned and acknowledged Thanos with a slight raise of his hand.
Though with the possibility of guests who are determined enough.
Thanos returned the salute.
Do you have many visitors? Not often. A few years back there was a ship lost out in the sweep, right at the edge of my perception. I thought it might be headed this way, but it was not to be. I could tell you more, but I see by your expression that I've made my case. Tea?
The kettle, as he called it, was whistling, steam pouring from a vent at its top. Thanos, who had never witnessed tea made in such a fashion, nodded. He watched as the lore speaker undertook a lengthy ritual. First, he placed dried leaves in a mesh. Then he poured the boiling water into a cup, over and through the mesh. When the cup was full, he dunked the mesh inside, then repeated the whole process with a second cup.
It took forever. Now we let it steep.
The lore speaker smiled at him and sat across from Thanos. He sighed contentedly and clapped his hands together.
What can I do for you?
Eyeing the 2 steaming mugs, Thanos asked.
How long does it steep?
A few minutes. Is that what you came here to ask?
No,
Thanos said dryly.
I didn't think so.
The lore speaker leaned over the mugs and inhaled deeply.
Ah, jazzberry and hibiscus. Smell that, Thanos. Isn't it delightful?
With a resigned sigh, Thanos did as he was bade, leaning forward and drawing in a breath.
It's delightful, he said.
May we speak?
The lore speaker stared at him for a protracted period. Just as Thanos was about to speak, the lore speaker shook.